Amen.
Yeah, yeah.
Bob Nichols.
From Linden, Washington. By way of Texas a long time ago.
All right. Hey, guys. Everybody doing okay? Did you get a handout? If you didn't, Jenna has them and pens if you so want one. Today's loaded with a lot of information, and so I won't. That's an outline of what we're going to talk about. So you know if the outline's that big, Lord help us. We're going to talk about reconnecting trust. Reconnecting trust. How many of you realize that our society is pretty prone to teaching our children to distrust? Yeah. Don't take a ride from strangers. You learn how to distrust even the media. I actually remember the time when, if it was printed in the paper or you saw it on television, you'd take it as gold. Good stuff. And I don't know about you, but I'm at a point in my life and my journey, I don't know how much I believe, if any, many times things that are said and done. So we have this whole fabric within, part of the fabric within relationships that teaches us to distrust. Let me give you a few little factoids. I'm just going to scream through them about trusting, because our focus this morning is to talk about how do you reconnect trust once you've broken it. I don't care who you are and how spiritual you are, but every one of us have been in relationships or are in relationships where trust is broken. Somebody says something, they don't do it. Or they don't tell you about it. They hide it. We all have this area of our relationships. So then how do you reconnect trust once it's been broken? That's where we're going today. Let me give you some factoids. Trusting people have better interpersonal relationships. People that are low in trust tend to be more angry, competitive, resentful, and unempathetic. And if you want the studies that I pull these from, I can give you those at another time later. Trusting but not naive people tend to be happier. They're better liked, they're more honest, more moralistic, philanthropic than less trusting people. Not all distrustful people are dishonest themselves. However, there is a tendency in that direction. High and low trusters are about the same in intelligence. You might think trusters are more gullible, but a guy, his name's Rotter, his research says no. Higher trusters frequently take the view, I'll trust them until they prove me wrong. So they are not necessarily more trusting. It is a distrustful person who is more likely to be taken by a con artist. That actually sounds, let me show you how. A distrustful person is more likely to be taken by a con artist. Since the dishonest person believes the whole world is crooked, how many of you realize that you will see your perspective is greatly tinted by your own experiences, even by your own character? So if you have a dysfunction or a weakness in character, how many of you realize that as you view other people, you're going to view them possibly having the same? You okay with that? Since a dishonest person believes the world is crooked, that's how everybody makes a fast buck. When a drug dealer comes along and offers to pay $10,000 in 10 days, if he or she will give them $500 to fly a part into their plane in Mexico, the dishonest person will hand over their $500. But a moralistic, trusting person is more likely to say, I don't want to get involved in something that's dishonest. Y'all okay? Distrusting people tend to be more competitive rather than cooperative. Trusting people are more likely to give someone a second chance. So trust is the fabric of our relationships. But when trust is disconnected or broken, we engage in a feeling that is known as betrayal. Betrayal takes many forms and is felt at many different levels. There are two basic ingredients in a disconnected trust relationship. Number one is the type of violation. Was it a lie? Was it deceit? Was it cheating? Was it infidelity? The type of violation. How many of you realize that a little white lie to a neighbor about what happened to his dog is not the same as dealing with an infidelity in a relationship, in a marriage? You get the weight difference. The type of violation. Secondly, the level of the relationship violated. Were they an acquaintance, a friend, a partner, a work colleague, a spouse? So it can go from something very mild to an acquaintance-type relationship to something very severe to someone that you completely trust, that your life is involved with. So why trust? The most common ways, there's really two most common ways that we react to distrust. One is called the moralistic, and the other is called the psychological. Let me show you what they are. A moralistic approach looks for cause and effect within a set of morals. For the Christian, we look to the Bible to defend those morals, to define those morals. This approach requires a change of mind, usually through a choice process. By choosing to embrace certain principles, certain truths, choosing to embrace change, we adapt to different behavior. That's the moralistic approach. But secondly, there is the psychological approach that tries to find out what is wrong internally and then helps us to learn more healthy ways, productive ways of living. This kind of self-exploration many times takes quite a bit of time to discover roots of our problem, to chart the course towards self-awareness, and to better cope with the issues. But what I'm going to suggest to you this morning, I believe there is a third approach. And I call that approach a connection approach. Could it possibly be that God has put within each of us His power, which when we connect to one another, allows us to find the good that God has already placed within them and to release that good so that they can respond to the purposes of God in their life? So here's the main premise of the connection approach. The sinner of a forgiven person is not sin. Neither is it some psychological complex. The sinner of a person is their capacity to connect. From the very beginning, from Adam in the garden, the only not good was it's not good for man to be alone. I believe God has given each of us a capacity to connect. The gift of salvation through the Holy Spirit allows us to connect first with God the Father and then at a newer and deeper level with each other. Do you remember the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are three fully connected persons. They delight in each other for all eternity. There's no envy, no jealousy. They love each other. They do what's best for each other. So God made us in His image, and I'm just suggesting to you this morning, we have that same capacity to enjoy each other. But we have to allow God to show us the good in the other person. Now remember, I'm setting you up to talk about how to reconnect broken trust. Connection is so powerful because it requires that you look past the surface of people and see the divine potential. You look at what that person could be, not just what they are or what they have been. With God's insight, we'll see what God has already done, and we ask God to allow us to have some vision as to what that person could be like. So how do you develop trust? This is really huge. This is what you're here for this morning. I want to talk to you about how you develop trust. There are two basic approaches to reconnection of trust. The most common is you choose to trust. Trust is a choice. And when you choose to trust, look up here at me for a moment, that gets you into the room. Here's a door, I'm coming into a room. I choose to trust that allows me to step into a room where we go through many experiences, many battles, conflicts to believe. Okay, I'm a teacher, so I'm playing on words. It begins with a choice to trust. You want to reconnect? Choose to trust. But then, that doesn't mean you're going to believe everything. Then you get into a room where you now have to work out this belief stuff, to where we finally want to get to a place on the other side of that room where we have faith in that person. Okay, here we go again. It begins with a choice to trust that gets me into the room where I battle to believe, which then gets me to a point where I have faith in that person. Now I'm pausing to allow you to kind of assimilate that and to digest that for a moment. When we get into the battle to believe area, we choose to trust, okay, we're going to give this thing a go. Especially when you have a relationship like a marriage or a relationship that is deep and long lasting. Yeah, I'm going to choose to trust every time. Why? Because I believe in that relationship. I believe God gave me that relationship. So I'm going to keep entering that room, but right inside this room is where we get into a complexity. And the reason it becomes difficult, and the reason I call it a battle to believe, is because for most people, the way they reconnect trust is through performance. So if you do good, boy, in this room for the next several times, if you do good and you don't keep shooting yourself in the foot through what you do, what you say, your inconsistencies, your secret life, your hidden lies, if you do good, then we will come to a place that we place faith in you. No more battles, we come to resolve. Are y'all okay with all that? I can tell you're thinking. Some of you got the bobble thing going on, the bobblehead. Choose to trust. That's the door. Gets me into a place, a room where I battle to believe in that person. Did you hear that word? Battle to believe what? In that person. Till finally, depending on their performance, I place my faith in them. Oh yeah, man, Ernie, he's a guy who can do it. And why are you saying that? Because I've seen him do it 1,000 times. Because his performance has dictated trust. He's earned it. And you've heard many people say, forgiveness is given, but trust is earned. All right, there's some truth in that. Every one of us sitting here has stepped into that particular MO, that particular process of reconnecting trust. But there's a second one. And it's the one that is going to be a challenge. But it's going to be the one that I'm going to commend to you. Recommend to you. Okay, watch the process of number two. Just like number one, you make a choice to trust. If you don't get to number one, in other words, you're not going to even step through the door, you have already entered into a judgment, and that judgment will quietus, it'll cut off that relationship. So I choose to trust, which gets me into the room. What's this? I battle to believe not in the other person, but I battle to believe on behalf of the other person. You got to get that difference. This approach doesn't depend upon the track record of the other person. But in the midst of their failure, you, who are you? You're the one that has been offended. You're the one that has been violated. You're not the perp. In this case, you're the victim, in a good sense of the word. You connect in the midst of that failure, in the midst of the battle, you connect with the faith of God. And in that battle, now it's not so much a battle just for you to believe in the person. It's a battle that you are entering into on behalf of the other person. You're not believing, you're not battling to believe in, you're battling on their behalf. Until you come to a place of resolve, a place of rest, a place of faith. I said you connect with the faith of God. How many of you remember Galatians 2:20? For I'm crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I. But the life that I live by the faith that most of your versions will read, NIV reads, by the faith in the Son of God. But if you look it up, if you do your little Strong's Concordance deal, what you're going to find that word is what we call in Greek a possessive genitive, which basically says this: God owns the faith. It's God's faith. More accurately said, I now live by the faith of God. Not from God, not in God, but God's faith. God wants to deposit his faith. You ever thought about that? That's kind of a funky question, isn't it? Why does God need faith? Because he's got to work with you and me. But God actually has that same faith. And we want to tap into that faith, which enables us to fight, not to believe in that person, but to believe on behalf of that person. Sure. That's correct. Absolutely. Isn't that what he did for us?
Yes.
That sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Instead, you'd rather give them the...
Man, there's so many.
Make the list. Now we know why you're here. We also know why the group is small, so that we can process this. You want to take that or you want me to take it?
Well, it's going to come. It'll come later. Yes, it's
those kind of things. We're doing this together. She's going to do the activations and illustrations. But that is a good question. It's a whole different thing. Okay, here's what I want you to catch the difference here, because in most broken relationships, our focus is on how they screwed up and they're not trustworthy. We don't believe in them. Therefore, we go through this battling to believe, and it's built upon repetition of behavior. And we watch them time after time after time. They have to earn their trust back. Till finally, there's a magical number that they've reached, and your heart is at peace, and there's not been conflict for several months. They haven't failed for several months. You've seen good progress. It's built on their performance. So now that trust, that battling to believe, now I have faith in them. Now that can get violated the next day, and you're all the way back here at square one. And what I'm suggesting to you is that there is an alternative. And that alternative when we come into this battling area, we're not just battling, focusing on my ability or capacity to believe based on their performance. Listen, her, him, honey, sweetheart, if you don't screw up for the next several months, this will all be over. Time heals. What that really means is that gives you time to do it right. And if you do it right, then we'll reconnect the trust. And I'll believe in you once again. But if you don't do it right, the battle goes on. And pretty soon you get weary of the battle. So you say, this isn't worth it. Adios. And you discard the relationship because it's too stressful. So what I'm suggesting to you, there's an alternative. That there's something about faith that comes from God. Not the faith that comes from hearing the word. I'm talking about God's faith. Where you're saying, God, impart to me the faith so that I can see the person the way that you see them. And now I want to battle. Lord, let me know every time they're coming into the same temptation, every time that they're coming to the edge of the cliff and they're about to step off, let me know so that I can fight on their behalf. Because I'm using your faith. I'm seeing how you seeing them, how you see them. And now I want to fight through till I come to a place of resolve, a place of peace. Because see, ultimately, you notice how I switched it. I don't come to a place where I have faith in them. I come to a place of resolve, a place of peace. Because ultimately, my faith isn't in them. My faith is in the one who gave me the faith, who helped me battle through. I had to kind of have to look through them to the hand of God. God, I'm trusting you in all this. Are you seeing the differences? Did somebody else have a question? Or I saw another hand. Nobody? Okay. Hey, Ernie. Say again. Usually it's judgment. More times than not, it's judgment. When somebody hurts you, violates you, breaks the trust, that is one of the two most common causes of offense. Violated. Broken promise. Unfulfilled expectation. So what do I do with that? When you get wounded, you always have a choice. You can be wounded but not offended. You don't have to go there. But if you don't become intentional about this process, then you and I will usually default to a judgment. And you say, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, after all, they were wrong, I'm right. And that's probably true. But the wrong thing about it, the problem with that is this little spiritual principle that God puts in there. He says, judge not lest you be judged, for in the manner that you judge, it's going to come right back to you. Boomerang principle. It's going to hit you right here. And you're going to become the very thing that has hurt you and that you detest. Number one, number two, judgments. Most common judgments. Number one, I'll never treat my children the way my parents treated me. And that becomes an internal judgment. By the way, judgments have two stepchildren, a vow and a curse. A vow is inward, curse is outward. A vow says, I'm never going to do that. Curse says, you're doing that. It actually pronounces your internal judgment upon that person. And I want you to hear very clearly when Matthew says, when Jesus says in Matthew, judge not lest you be judged. He's saying you set in your judgment sets a principle into action that actually prohibits you from being able to engage. It prohibits you from being able to fully forgive so that you can enter into this battle on their behalf. Because why? I'm hurt. I don't want to enter into it. I want justice. I don't want healing and reconciliation. I want justice. Fairness. Right. By the way, if you wonder where all that comes from, all those big words, fairness, justice, right, they all come from the tree of knowledge of good and evil back in the Garden of Eden where he says, I don't want you to eat from that tree. I want you to eat from the tree of life. Why doesn't he want you to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, of right and wrong? Because it develops within us this propensity to have to be right. And it develops within us a propensity to not be able to let go when we're not right, when we are violated, when we're hurt, and we're not able to move into forgiveness. And you're going to see in just a moment, forgiveness is an absolute key to get into this middle room of battling. You're not going to be able to get there and stay there and work there on behalf of that other person, battling for them. God, let me have your faith. Show me when they're beginning to slip. Just prick my heart to pray for them. Hey, this is parenting 101, isn't it? This is how you, and by the way, it goes both ways. I could say to a young person back to their parents, because we parents aren't perfect. Sad day when our kids finally realize that, isn't it? Jenna? My wife is my example person. That will be a word that we will encounter in just a few minutes. You guys are thinking, I love it. Yep.
People, I feel, and I've been victim of this, is believing that justice is forgiveness or healing.
Well, it depends on how you define justice, but I believe it can be. You know, but because we're looking at it from God's perspective versus man's. You know, you hurt me or I hurt you, then if I choose to forgive you, then really all the stuff Jesus did on the cross and all that forgiveness and mercy stuff, all the judgment for all of our inadequacies and our weaknesses and failures and sin that went upon Jesus, now that is getting delivered. That's what forgiveness is. That's that package that kind of gets dropped at your front door by FedEx, you know. It's and so now I'm able to forgive, because God's justice was satisfied. But when we look at man and how we feel about a situation, I prefer to use the words right and wrong. Well, I'm right. Fair. This isn't fair.
Right. That's what I mean, is they don't separate. I haven't. I felt that, oh, I kept, instead of looking at it as in, oh, they got justice or I got justice, now I can forgive them, instead of the justice is the forgiveness.
Yep. Yep.
That's a hard one to,
yes,
process.
Yeah. And forgiveness is a foundation for trust, but it's not to be misequated with trust.
Right.
I can choose to forgive and still reserve my trust. Not too long ago, I found my biological mother, and I've shared some of that with you guys. And in the process of that, I found out she had, I think there are 5 girls and 4 guys, 9 siblings. She was one of those. But one of her brothers was a state trooper here in Texas. And 24 or 5 years old, got shot and killed by a guy who just killed 3 other people. And he pulled him over, road violation, speeding, whatever, and pulled him over, and the guy shot him. Point is that he just came out. He's come out the last 2, I think every 2 years they do a probation review. They go before a review board, and one of my cousins called me and he said, I'm going to go to the probation. Said, I've gone every year. And said, well, you know, we speak forgiveness over him, but we don't want him let out. He's not showing signs of rehabilitation. We don't want him let out. Okay. That's showing a little bit of difference between the forgiveness you can forgive. We don't trust him. Okay. Trustworthy person. You know, there's certain attributes within people that endear trusting them and others dissuade trusting them. Just scream through a couple and then I'm going to hand this to Laura. An endearing attributes that endear you to want to trust them are honesty, good self-esteem where they're not so need-oriented. They're empathetic, transparent, able to accept criticism, forgiving, I mean, that sounds like the kind of person you want to hang with, doesn't it? But then other attributes that cause you not want to trust that person. When they're guarded, they're not transparent. They got their little secrets. They're need-driven, not completely honest, very reserved in their feelings, judgmental, critical, resentful, competitive, a track record of distrust. Most of psychology and sociology will tell you this: repetition of behavior, repetition is the key to the behavior. There's a reason that Daniel prayed 5 times a day, so all of a sudden when he finds himself in a pickle, he's already in the gear. He doesn't have to, oh well, time to pray now. He's already in that gear. That discipline created that particular piece of character, of behavior, to where he was good in the battle. That's why you go in the military, you go through so much training. Why? Trust your training, trust your training, trust your training. Why? Because they're trusting that repetition of that behavior is going to kick into gear when you're in time of crisis and you don't have time to think. Okay. I want you to see that's very similar in this case. So what do you need to do when trust is betrayed? I've taught this for you probably 25 or 30 times. 6 keys on forgiveness. Forgiveness is a choice, not a feeling. When you feel least like forgiving is probably when you need to choose the most to forgive. 2, we don't forgive because they're worth it, because they deserve it, they earned it, but we forgive because Jesus asked us to forgive. 3, we don't forgive out of our own abilities or resources, but from the mercy he has given you. How many of you know the verse, his mercy is new every morning? Great is thy faithfulness. His mercy is new every morning. So how many of you had some weakness, failure, sin in the past week that you implored the Lord for his mercy and he poured out fresh mercy to you? And it is from that mercy that he poured into you that now you take a cup and dip into that and you pour over the head of the one who needs forgiveness. It's not your own ability. You're not grunting out mercy like a chicken lays an egg, you know. You're not doing that. It's not something you have to conjure up or work up. It's his mercy through you. Just like when I've showed you the second way of connecting trust, you're using the faith of God to see that person the way God sees them. This is the same. We're using his mercy to release forgiveness. 4, we release our expectations and rights. As long as you hold on to the fact you're right and they're wrong, and it's more important to you to be right, fair, forgiveness will never be complete. It'll be partial. Hebrews 10:18, where there is forgiveness, there no longer remains an offering for sin. The word offering literally means a price to be paid or something to be done. So when you say to someone, I forgive you, you're releasing him or her from any further responsibility of response. Now I'm talking about you, your attitude, what's filling your heart. Now you have every right. There's that word. I got a right. Boy, we've developed a culture of right, haven't we? And passed it on to our kids. Where necessary, learn to forgive yourself. That's a tough one. Where necessary, learn to forgive yourself. You know, not forgiving yourself sounds so humble. But in fact, it's actually connected to pride, not humility. Because what it says is, Jesus, what you did on the cross is good enough for everybody else, but not enough for me. Okay. Touch back once again. The most common way people reconnect trust, they choose to trust. That means they're going to stay in the relationship. They're staying at the table. And they get into a battle to believe in that person. And when they're in that room of battling, what they're doing is watching for changed behavior. In other words, the guy who screwed up, the girl who screwed up, they're under the microscope, and their performance is going to determine whether or not we're able to come and have faith in that person. That's one way, and it's the most common way people deal with reconnecting broken trust. The other way, we choose to stay in the relationship. We're going to stay at the table. We choose to trust. And now I'm saying, God, I'm in these battles here, but the battles are not my battles for me to trust. God, I want to see that person the way you see them. I want to see their future. I want to see their who you made them to be, so that now every time they come close to the edge, every time they come near another failure, a repeated trust violation, that you alert me so I can go and battle on their behalf. I'm standing against the enemy. I'm calling down the hand and the work of God, the Spirit of God to invade that situation, et cetera, et cetera. So that then I may come to a place of resolve, a place of peace. Now you notice, again, I changed. I'm not coming to a place where I have faith in that person. I'm coming to a place of resolve and peace, because ultimately my faith is going to be able to look at that person who has brought me pain, broken trust, and I'm able to see the hand of God, who God's made them to be, and they're on the journey just like me, just like you. But ultimately, my trust is in His hand, His power, His faith. By the way, this is my first wife.
Only one.
Head of all my concubines.
The only one. We're getting, is this on? Is this on? Okay, we're getting ready to have 50 years of marriage. Woo! You can imagine how much this has applied to us. We're speaking from experience and still are.
Still experiencing.
Yeah, still experiencing. One thing, before I get into the example, is when we're standing out. Now, I'm going to use marriage as an example. It can happen in any kind of relationship to varying degrees, but marriage is the most ultimate covenant relationship. And when you make commitments, they're usually lifelong commitments. They're intense commitments, but not a job and not a, you know, different other commitments that you make. So I'm going to go straight to that. But anyway, when you're standing outside and you've decided together that we're going to make this leap to trust God and trust one another, you walk through the door and then you get in the door together. And here you are looking at each other. And if you look down this list of what is a good person to trust and what is a harder person to trust, I promise you that each one of us has been on both lists at some point or another,
yeah,
correct?
That's for sure.
I mean, okay, so here we are. So, but some tendencies are stronger than others. And so what God is asking us to do is be like He is, be who He is, which, if you think about it, God puts His faith in a man until the day that they die. He is hoping, trusting, and believing for them as children, as His children, every single day up until the day they die. What is part of the marriage vow? Until death do you part. Every single day, God says, I want you to trust. So, just say, I'm just going to pick an example. If you take from the list of the attributes to trust, and your spouse may be strong in the morality, the self-esteem, the empathy, his transparency, and I'm going to just speak him because I'm the woman. But he gets to the able to accept criticism. That's really a tough one. But he's good at forgiving, but man, that accept criticism, that's just a hard one. He just can't do it very well. So here we are in this relationship, and I look down the other side of the list where the attributes that is harder to trust, he's guarded, but he's not. He's not need-driven. He's not, he's amoral. He's not completely honest. He's not that for sure. Restricted in his feelings. He's not restricted in his feelings. Judgmental and critical. Yeah, there's a bit of that. So here we've got somebody who is critical of himself. He doesn't accept criticism. And he has not judged himself rightly. Because he's not standing for before God saying, God, I'm forgiven. I'm perfect. So when something comes up, he says something like, ugh, I'm just dumb. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. This is the way it always goes for me. You know, some of those comments, and it hurts you because this is your spouse, and you realize he's not judging himself rightly. So my job is to go, okay, he's not judging himself rightly. This is really hard on me because he may even turn around and try to put it back on somebody else or me. And then you say, okay, am I going to be critical and judgmental back? Am I just going to get frustrated? And if this happens again, am I just going to just push myself away? And God says to me, no, judge yourself rightly. Judge yourself rightly, Laura. Judge yourself rightly. So what does that mean? That means I have to forgive. I have to trust with the trust of God. Does that make sense? You get that? Okay. So God is asking us in this relationship. Now, the sad part about it, which you have to keep trusting for, it affects intimacy. Do you understand that? It affects the intimacy between the couple. So you have to keep fighting for it. You have to keep fighting. Doesn't mean that it's affected other intimacy areas in your life, but that one, it just keeps a little bit of tension between the intimacy on that. But you cannot let it stop your belief, your faith of God toward that person. That's just an example of how this works. And if you look at each one of those, you can kind of find a counterpart and realize this is a battle worth fighting. It's a battle worth saying, okay, I believe in you and I believe God is working on you. I believe that I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to love you through this. I'm going to believe that you're going to be able to conquer this. And I'm going to ask God to show you and me what is the root of this. Where is this coming from? Because there's usually a deep root that is causing this activity, this emotion, this problem that is keeping distrust between you. You know, the enemy has come to steal, kill, and destroy. And he's going to do whatever it takes, even if it's a little irritant, a little foxhole, a little anything to keep you guys apart. So you have to keep fighting. You have to keep fighting. And marriage is a lifelong fight to keep a relationship intimate, kind, loving, forgiving, and trusting. Okay, so this is where we're going to have a little activation. And I know some of you are not here with spouses. Some of you are just here singly. And if you have somebody you can just get with, if you're here singly, we're going to look at possibly... Let's see where it is. It's on the top of page 5. Share one area that you would like your spouse or partner to forgive you. And then after listening to that area, make a good confession and walk through the process of forgiveness. And it would be good for both of you to make a good confession. Confess over the other something good. Confess over yourself, because you have to start with forgiving yourself first. I know it was the last on the list, but really, honestly, that's where it starts, because the intimacy with God and that open communication between God is absolute priority. So if would be possible, if you want to move a little bit and just have a little break and sit in a little quieter space instead of right here together, but come back. And let's just take a few minutes and do this little activation. Sound good?
Any questions?
Any questions before we get started?
Walk us through the exercise.
Okay. One more time. Share one area that you would like your spouse or partner or friend at this point, because you can share something with a friend, and ask them to forgive you. And then after you've listened to that area, make a good confession. So say something good, positive, different, ask forgiveness, and then walk through that process of forgiveness, forgiving yourself first, and then whatever other point of forgiveness, which there's a list, that he just read the list on forgiveness. Okay, does that make sense? Anything else?
We want you to see how much forgiveness is the foundation of trust. That's where we're going with all of this. And if you're not able to engage the forgiveness aspect, you need a woe of the horses, because you're not going to get to the reconnecting trust. All right? So that forgiveness, and we've taught on that a lot of times here, even practical steps to forgiveness. That's what this activation is about. You recognizing something, asking the other person to forgive you, make both of you make a good confession about that area. You know, no longer are you the jerk or whatever, you know, but making a good confession about that person. You know, what you're doing is seeing them the way God sees them. And you're confessing that. And then praying for them, exchanging the forgiveness. Will you forgive me? Okay? Go, guys.
Okay.
I had the question come up a couple of times about the confession. The confession is connected to us trying to see that other person the way God sees them. And so, you know, after we've asked and given forgiveness, both sides, it's not only the person who was hurt confessing, making a good confession over that person. You know, you're no longer judgmental. You're one who speaks the truth in righteousness, in love, et cetera, et cetera. But then that person has to say, make that same confession about themselves. It kind of tags into what Laura was talking about, learning to forgive yourself as well. Hope that was beneficial to you. Now, once forgiveness is in place, you need to allow healing to take place. And the key to healing is a safe environment. And the key to a safe environment or a safe place for healing are boundaries. Somebody asked that word and used that word earlier. If you don't, please don't misunderstand. You know, I'm not equating forgiveness with trust. Two different animals. And just because we are attempting to trust doesn't mean that we put up with crap where there's intentional destructive behavior going on. No, we interrupt that. We speak the truth in love. We call them out in love. We don't enable. But in the process of that, you know, when trust has been broken, the one who has been violated has to come to a place of healing. Just because they're entering into they make the decision to trust and they enter into the room to battle, to believe on behalf. They can still be battling, but they still need their own healing for that. And here's something I want you to see about healing. You know, I love the subject of healing. I'm always learning in that area. One thing I recognized a long time ago, you remember probably the most quoted verse about healing is, by his stripes we are healed. Really highly quoted verse. Where were the stripes of Jesus? What are they talking about? What stripes? He wasn't a zebra. Zebra. That's right. It was, well, as the cat of nine tails, the whipping, the stripes that left, you know, leather that had the pieces of glass and shard and bone in it that would lay open the skin till the internal organs were seen, because those things would wrap around, you know, when they're hit from the back. Here's the point. By his stripes were healed. The stripes were on the body. Who is the body of Christ? If any among you is sick, let him pray for himself? No, it says let him call for the elders. Healing is a body function. That's what I'm going after. So many times the healing that we need is going to be precipitated and held in the hands of others. So we'll need a safe place where that can take place. And sometimes this is where a counselor or trusted friend, a pastor, can be of great help, is in that area of healing. The last several decades, there's a term that has come out, has been frequently used, and it's the term inner healing. Great subject. A book was written on it. Some really powerful stuff in it. But it talks about the process of how God brings healing into a wound and what that looks like. Now, I'm simply saying that to let you know that even though you're in the room battling on behalf of that other person, you still may need healing within your own heart. So give yourself some room. And if you're the violator and that person is battling on your behalf and you've already gone through the process of asking forgiveness, I'm so sorry, I blew it, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, you give them some space for some healing to take place. Give them room. What's the key to healing? Safe place. What's the key to safe place? Boundaries. So there need to be boundaries. Why? Boundaries keep some things in, other things out. Boundaries ensure the proper growth and development. Boundaries. They interrupt repeated behavior. Okay. And that's really key to developing a safe place, so while this person is battling on your behalf, that they don't continue to get onslaughted and salt rubbed in the wound that you just caused them. Now, they ought to be over it. After all, I already asked forgiveness. That'll be the normal comeback. Understand, that takes some time, the healing. All right, and for that healing to take place, healing has to take place in order for reconnection. Now, before I go to the reconnection, there's four distinct tendencies, dispositions, inclinations, all those describing the same thing. Four people that have difficulty with this stage of reconnection. Now, remember, your ability to trust is dominantly formed during your adolescent or formative years. What are the formative years? What are we talking about? Come on, you can talk to me. Yeah, you're basically talking about 2, 3, 4 years old to early teenage. Girls, guys are different for each individual, you know, but it's when your emotionality is being formed. So, Proverbs says, you learn to trust upon your mother's breast. Well, that gives me the idea that it goes way back. Now, I'm going to describe these four tendencies, these four dispositions, these inclinations, four peoples that have difficulty in this area. Number one are the controllers. These are very self-aware. They know their strength. They have a solid sense of their adequacy to meet whatever lies ahead. And they tend to control their lives and everybody around their lives so they can get where they want to go. Their adequacy is self-driven. And it actually blocks them from depending on God. So they really lack this place of performance. Why? Because they're usually very good performers and they usually make great leaders. You will find a measure of control in just about any great leader. Well, that was a good point. Another disposition that has difficulty with this reconnection area are what I call destiny determiners. These are your planners. They got a plan. They know how everything's going to work. Due to life's issues, this person is the ultimate pragmatist. They hold to their plans, they trust their plans. So connecting is very hard for them, but because it would require them to trust God for the things they don't know that are outside of their plans. Heaven forbid if you try to walk in any direction that's outside of their plans. All right, that was an overwhelming Only Barbie would see that. Yep. There's Fred. There's Fred. There. No.
No.
We're
talking about ourselves.
I was talking about myself.
Paul.
Okay. They both seem to have like elements of control. How are they distinguished?
Well, to me, the destiny determiners work off of a plan. They're the ultimate planners. Everything's not, you know, you could have a controller that's very spiritual. They're not the pragmatists. They're the very... Yeah. The third one is the fearful protectors. These are guys and gals that build walls around themselves. Fearful protectors. Did I miss something? I don't know, I just made it up. Oh, they build walls. They build walls to protect themselves and their families from their fears. They're always in this protective mode, and therefore they're unable to fully engage in trust. Frequently it's because of a tragedy that's happened in their life. They slip into this ultra-protective mode. Fearful protective syndrome. But they have a great deal of trouble in the reconnection of trust because fear, the number one MO, defensive MO, for fear, method of operation of dealing with fear, the number one way we deal with fear is through what? Control. I remember a pastor called, working with a church in Holland, and he said, you know, we put in this new young spiritual son, a pastor, and we're having difficulty. I got a call from four of my elders that are over there. He had started the church. The guy I'm talking to has started the church, raised it up, and then put this young man in. And they are talking about how controlling he is. He's just not able to hear our plans. We're not able to function as elders. You know, we just have to, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, you know. And he said, what do I do? This guy's calling me. He's given oversight to that church calling me. And I said, well, listen. I'll be over there next month. And what we need to do is to sit down with this pastor. And we need to find out what he is afraid of. Because when we find that out, we're going to find out why he is controlling. And what he was afraid of, you know, he had not been to Bible school. He wasn't the super leader, charisma type of guy that his spiritual father was. So he was afraid, he just didn't have the guns to do it. And he was afraid to really receive from his spiritual father and the other elders, they believed in him. So therefore, he was the planner, he was afraid, and he locked down with control. So as soon as we got through that, things opened up and things changed. Became a good team, a good functional team in the church, and things went better. Okay, the fourth tendency, the fourth disposition is this wanting wanderer. This is a person who's constantly seeking fulfillment and contentment, but they want it done immediately. We live in a very fast-paced world, a microwave society, and we're wondering why God is taking so long bringing this stuff about. So we find our own ways to satisfy our needs, to fulfill ourselves. I mean, we can go anywhere. Anywhere that's an addiction, you can go and you'll find people using that area for their self-fulfillment. They're a wanting wanderer. They're not able to connect with God. Why? He doesn't move fast enough for them. So they go do it themselves. In fact, you would find it behind a lot of pornography. You'd find it a lot of people who go in and out of relationships and they never can stay in a relationship. They're always broken relationships. Or they go after the bad boy or the bad girl in the relationships. Or how about this? They go after shopping. Now, all of us have to shop, but it can become an addiction, can't it? You know, especially with Amazon. An Instacart, I mean, heavens, help us. Hobbies can become that. It's a substitute fulfillment, a substitute addictions, anything that's an addiction. Okay, do you get those four tendencies, dispositions?
Yep, got all four.
You need to hook up with whoever Barbie's talking about. Sound like we got a pair here. Come ahead, babe.
So the sad thing is, it's probably true. If we take the example of what I used earlier, within the relationship, one was critical, judgmental, that's what they were struggling with, down on themselves, all that. You have to look deeper and say, okay, where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? What is manifesting perhaps through that life? Because as the one who is praying, the victim, or whatever we want to call
it. The wounded one, yep.
Yeah, the wounded one. What is my position, my job? My job is to keep praying and possibly bring some answers, try to connect as much as possible, but continue to trust God for that person. And what that does is that builds intimacy with God. Now, it doesn't necessarily hasn't worked on the intimacy this way because we're still struggling to come to faith, the faith of God. We're still struggling as a couple, but you get stronger and stronger in your intimacy with God. Keep praying, and God will break through. He will break through for you because He's promised He will. That's just bottom line. So don't give up on God. And if you don't give up on God and receive His faith, you will not give up on your spouse or your partner or the situation.
Good.
So with that, let's, which of these four tendencies, I know we all have all, or struggle with all at some point.
At different times, yeah.
Yes, at different times. But what would you say with what you just talked about with your partner, your friend, whoever you were talking with? What would you say would be the number one root cause and maybe the number two root cause? So kind of peruse that, and if you'll get together and talk about that and pray for one another. And there it is, activation. Which one of these four tendencies do you personally struggle with? And can you give an illustration of your struggle in this area? And then if you can maybe even go a little further than that and make a plan to do better. Like, when I feel myself there, I want to tell you so you can pray with me. Something, some kind of plan. All right, does that make sense? Okay, let's go.
Before I do that, I listed on your page six questions to ask if a relationship is viable for relaunching. This is not mine. This you can accredit to Dr. Phil. He did a good job on it, and it's basically for people that have gone through a busted relationship, and then they decide they want to try again. Divorce, remarriage, it's that kind of thing. They've been separated, etc. And these are some questions that you need to ask, which I think are excellent personally. I'll just scream through them and leave them with you. Is this relationship breach an isolated event or a behavior pattern? In other words, has it happened before? Is the violating party owning the problem or making excuses? That's a great one. If they're making excuses, watch out. Does the violator have insight to their weakness, or are they oblivious to their relationship problems? Number four, are they sorry for the choice or sorry that they got caught? Number five, are they willing to clean up to change, or are they in denial? And lastly, was their action produced by a character flaw or an insensitive gene? Okay, these are good, really healthy, good questions to answer. Trouble is, you still love that person and you want to reengage. But timing is everything in this case, because if they are not in a place where they're viable, where they're healthy enough to relaunch a relationship, it's going to be same song, second verse once you get into it. They'll sound good on the front end. I've fixed all this up. I went to AA. I went to... But you get back into the relationship and all of a sudden we're back in the cycle again. So these are good questions to ask before. All right. Just hang on to those and keep them. Reconnection involves several steps. Now, I'm going to talk you through it practically. The first step is the foundation of forgiveness. Most of you understand that. If there's not forgiveness, you're going to have difficulty choosing to trust. Why? Because your choice is going to be more for fairness, rightness, the critical aspect. You're not going to be in the forgiveness area. Number two, we reconnect our trust in a big God. He who is able to turn, bless you, he's able to turn the hearts of kings wherever he wishes. You're looking through that person and you're seeing the hand of God. It focuses on the ability of God rather than the performance or the trustworthiness of another person. Number three, what are the three parts of your soul, guys? Mind, will, and emotions. So, because wounds affect all three of those, we need to learn how to process all three of them. We process a wound mentally. That's where we try to connect the dots. Why did this happen? Cause and effect. A skilled counselor can help you. A friend can provide some emotional support. But then secondly, we need to also process a wound volitionally. What does that mean? That's where we choose to forgive. We choose to break judgments. We choose to receive healing. We choose to go through that threshold of trust, cross that threshold of trust. We make some choices. You have to process a wound volitionally. You have to make some choices. Thirdly, we process a wound emotionally. And this is where the healing takes place. This is where the boundaries to provide the safe place so that the healing can take place. Which, by the way, is number six. That emotional is really, really important. Here's part of the reason why. I'm not going to teach on this now, but your emotions and the trauma that you receive, the wounds that you receive, have ability to write things upon your heart that will actually affect your behavior. You go through as a young person, you go through an incredible emotional, physical abuse. A young lady, probably the most common, a young lady from an older relative. And then upon that little heart, those emotions, notice I didn't say her brain, her emotions write, all men are dogs. Don't trust any man, et cetera, et cetera. Your emotions have an ability to write things that have yet to be processed by this, by your mind. This isn't a cause and effect. This is not about understanding. This is what your emotions have the ability to do and how your emotions, without your understanding, can affect your behavior. Therefore, that's why the healing has to take place. It's imperative. You're not going to be a safe place to reconnect until that healing takes place. Again, number six, the key word to healing is the word safe place. And the key to safe place are boundaries. We could do a whole Saturday on the boundaries, couldn't we? Cloud and Townsend, is it Cloud and Townsend? Do the books on boundaries. We got a whole series of those things, you know, boundaries for just the boundaries, and then boundaries for married couples, boundaries for teenagers, boundaries for dogs and cats or whatever, you know. They got boundaries for everything. But they make some great applications. And then number seven, reinforcement by repetition of experience activates our believing. Rebuilding trust is an arduous task at best. It takes time, intentional, strategic effort on the parts of both violator and violated. The violator has to work on rebuilding the trust. The violated needs to know that the violator is intentional about what he or she is doing. And in this way, trust is built. There'll come a day after you've witnessed enough of these trust events that you will come to faith. Now, that is the number one most common way we process. I gave you an alternative. instead of faith in that person about how we come to resolve as we have battled on their behalf, because we're able to look through and see God's hand. But we go through these trust events. You have some extra notes that are down about reconnecting trust. I'm just going to touch them briefly. Trust is not reconnected by unintentional life. In other words, it's not going to just happen. It just takes time. No, it's not going to just happen. It needs to be intentional and strategic. Get after it. Don't act like it's just going to happen. Trust is not reconnected just due to an absence of conflict. That's a good one, isn't it? Just because you got a measure of peace in the house doesn't necessarily mean that trust is being reconnected. Trust has to do with self-awareness, with honesty, with transparency. And then finally, the last little phrase, faith is reinstated. Hope you caught that little trilogy. Those of you Bible students, trust, belief, and faith. Those are all cousins. They're brothers. Belief is the activity of faith. Trust is the threshold or the door that allows you to engage believing. Those three work together. All right. Some practicals to aid you in your ongoing trust issues. Number one, develop a personal conscious method of connecting with God on a daily basis. Be willing to listen to God. Talk to Him. Psalm 68. Trust in the Lord. Pour your heart out before Him. You know, there's a direct connection between your ability to trust and your pouring out your heart before God, because it is that pouring out the heart that allows this relationship, the God connection, the faith of God, to then fill your heart and keep you connected so you can get through the battles, so you can battle on behalf of. So you're not just the victim. Now, I'm a warrior on behalf of that person. Number two, list and prioritize the issues one at a time. The issues that have broken the trust. How many of you journal? A few of you, off and on, yeah. That's really helpful to be able to articulate. Your articulation. Listen to others that are close around you that you can fight in, so that you can come to a place of understanding reality. How many of you realize your perception may be your reality, but it may not be the reality? Especially somebody else that you're having trust issues with. Process the new information. Process with a close friend, a sounding board, counselor. Understand what you can. Choose to change. Choose to be reconciled rather than be right. Reconnect the big picture. What does that mean? I'm looking through that person and I want to see who God made them to be, and I'm looking to the hand of God, the faith of God, to help me see who God created them to be, and that is whom I'm trusting for the reconciliation. One kind of final note on activating trust. Trust can be compartmentalized. Okay, what does that mean? Talk to me. What does that mean? Yep, exactly right. You trust in one area, but in other areas you don't. Okay, honey, I trust you with the kids, but I don't trust you with the finances. Or whatever. Vice versa.
Isn't that normal?
Trust can be compartmentalized. Okay, Laura. And she will bring our closing activation.
Okay, how does this work? Well, first of all, the first door we have to go through is with God.
Mm-hmm.
No marriage. Let's just with God. Okay, God, I'm going to trust you. You get in the room with God, Holy Spirit, Jesus, and it's a fight. It's a fight. It's a fight. Lord, I'm suffering. I'm suffering here. I need to come to Jesus' meeting. I need to get there. I need to have faith in you that you will do this. This is the fight. So you struggle, you come to faith, and then you walk out a victor. Okay, now I'm ready to go to the next door. Okay, here we go with my spouse. I'm coming in with full faith to get to this next one because I got another battle to face.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ongoing process. But if you start with that battle with the Lord and win that, then it's much easier to conquer the rest. So, let's share at least three areas in a relationship, in your relationship that you trust in. And if you can share three, like I trust you with finances, I trust you with the children, I trust you with your friends, I trust you with where you go, I trust you with where you watch. There's lots of ways you can trust one another that are you've conquered. Then you can share one that you're having a struggle with. So let's get together and share three that you trust in, and then you can share one that you're struggling with. If you can't share three, you can't share that one.
Did you hear that qualifier? If you can't share three areas that you trust them in, then you don't get to share an area that you struggle trusting them in. That's also a good rule of thumb for parenting. You share the positives before you share the negatives.
Yep.
Yes?
I was making a
rule of thumb. Okay.